It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. Final Iran nuclear agreement deadline may be missed. A senior U.S. administration official says Iran nuclear negotiators may not make a June 30th deadline for a final agreement. White House spokesman Josh Earnest echoed that assessment Thursday.
We have acknowledged that June 30th is a deadline. It's still a deadline that we're operating against. I certainly would rule out the possibility that, much like what happened earlier this spring, that this is a these are negotiations that could spill over the deadline by a couple of days.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry travels to Vienna today, where Iran nuclear talks have been underway. Islamic State fighters launched two major attacks in northern Syria on Thursday, a fresh offensive on the Kurdish-held border city of Kobani, and a push into government-held areas in the mostly Kurdish town of Hasaka. The attacks came after the militants suffered a series of setbacks in northern Syria against Kurdish forces in recent weeks. Here in Washington, U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby was asked about the news of Islamic State gains.
Oh, certainly it concerns us. I mean, any move by ISIL to take or to retake territory is of concern. I mean, we know that ground matters to this group.
State Department spokesman John Kirby. Nigeria's new president will be meeting with President Barack Obama next month to discuss the fight against militant group Boko Haram and other crucial issues. The White House says Mr. Obama will host President Muhammadu Buhari at the White House on July 20th. President Buhari was inaugurated last month after defeating predecessor Goodluck Jonathan in the March election. That election marked the first peaceful transfer of power in Nigeria since the country returned to democracy in 1999. This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin called President Obama to discuss continued tensions in eastern Ukraine and various areas of concern in the Middle East. The White House said President Obama told Mr. Putin he needs to remove all troops and equipment from Ukrainian territory. President Putin, who's consistently denied backing the pro-Russian rebels in Ukraine, initiated a phone call on Thursday. There is still no end to the Greek financial crisis. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras held Thursday's round of talks with Greece's creditors in Brussels, hoping to achieve a bailout agreement to save his country from default next week. Here is Greek Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis.
Interestingly, several colleagues disagreed and criticized not only our text, but also the text of the institutions. And we decided as a Eurogroup that we shall continue our deliberations.
Greece must make an almost $2 billion loan payment to the International Monetary Fund by next Tuesday. To do that, it needs an $8 billion installment of an EU economic bailout. A Greek debt default raises chances Athens will leave the 19-member euro currency union, and some warn the European Union as well. The body of South Carolina State Senator Clementa Pinckney came home Thursday evening to the church where he had been pastor for the past 5 years, Emmanuel AME in Charleston. Reverend Pinckney was one of nine black people killed by a white gunman during Bible study last week. President Obama will deliver the eulogy at Reverend Pinckney's funeral today. The U.S. Supreme Court handed President Obama a major victory Thursday, rejecting a legal challenge to the new U.S. health care law. The High Court voted 6-3 to affirm the legal status of the Affordable Care Act, more popularly known in the United States as Obamacare. President Obama spoke following the court's ruling.
But as the dust has settled, there can be no doubt that this law is working. It has changed and in some cases saved American lives. It set this country on a smarter, stronger course.
The Affordable Care Act is considered a linchpin of Mr. Obama's national political objectives. South Africa says it may withdraw from the International Criminal Court after controversy rose over its refusal to arrest Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir on genocide charges. The government spokesman said Thursday withdrawal would be a last resort after a review is made of the guidelines for the International Criminal Court. Angry Parisian taxi drivers claiming unfair competition from the mobile app-based ride-sharing company Uber blocked roadways with burning tires Thursday, disrupting transit and slowing traffic at train stations and airports to a crawl. Police said at least 70 cars were damaged and 7 police injured in some of the fiercest anti-Uber demonstrations in Europe since the company's arrival in 2012. I'm Ray Kugel.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's president launches his re-election campaign despite calls to delay the vote.
The elections for the 29th will be held, and our party, the CNDD-FDD party, will take part.
Pascal Yabenda is chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. Democratic Republic of Congo's government compiles a corruption list. The reinstated Secretary General of South Sudan's SPLM has met in Nairobi with Kenyan President Kenyatta. And Sierra Leone quarantines 3 doctors and 28 nurses due to Ebola.
When she came to the hospital, she didn't disclose that she came from a quarantine home. So that is where the 3 doctors who have always been visiting her, plus the 28 nurses, that was where they were quarantined.
Dr. Brahima Kabo is Sierra Leone's chief medical officer. A Washington panel discusses the state of democracy and economic development in Zimbabwe. And President Barack Obama wins a major Supreme Court victory on his health care law. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza remained defiant on Thursday as he launched his re-election campaign in front of thousands of cheering loyalists, even as there were more calls to delay parliamentary and presidential elections. Also on Thursday, second Vice President Gervais Rouvikiri, who fled the country to Belgium, urged Mr. Nkurunziza to withdraw his presidential bid because it violates the constitution. But Pascal Yabenda, chair of the ruling CNDD-FDD party, says calls for a dialogue and delay of the election are a disguise by the opposition to achieve their goal of a transitional government. He said only Burundian courts can interpret the country's constitution, not outsiders.
The elections for the 29th will be held, and our party, the CNDD-FDD party, will take part.
Well, there was a dialogue taking place between the ruling party, the government, and the opposition, which is to come up to some consensus before any elections are held.
I don't know which consensus they are talking about, because the head of state of the region said that we have to respect our constitution. Now, when we have some institutions which will be over after the 8th July, how can they say that we can going on postponing the elections? That is the other manner of them to get to the transitional government. That is what they want. That is what they needed before. And it is just to lie to the international community, saying that they want the dialogue because they need transitional government.
But what is wrong with having a transitional government, particularly when the whole election is controversial?
It's very wrong, very wrong, very wrong, mister. We don't want transitional government.
Why? I'm saying the election is controversial. Some people say that President Pierre Nkurunziza should not run because that will be in violation of the constitution.
That is your point of view. It's not correct. The constitution is for Burundians. Who else can interpret our constitution? It's only our court, not any other else.
We understand that President Pierre Nkurunziza, your candidate, the candidate for the CNDD-FDD party, has already launched his campaign.
Yes, today. Today he launched his campaign. Now we are upcountry campaigning for him.
Now, there are some people who say, sir, that by you going ahead with this, you are trying to plunge Burundi into a civil conflict.
Which one? No civil conflict.
What about the protest? There were some students who ran to the American embassy. They don't want the election.
When you talk about students who don't want election, what do you mean?
They were
protesting.
It's
very funny, mister. It's very funny to talk about students who don't want election. What do they represent in our country, those students? Which percentage they represent?
The second vice president of Burundi has left the country, and he's accusing the president of doing the wrong thing by going to the election.
Yeah, he has a Belgium nationality. He has gone back home.
Why did you make him vice president if you know he has Belgian nationality?
Yeah, because in our constitution, if you have two nationalities, you are welcome. If you are Burundian and you have another nationality. Now, he has chosen to go back to Belgium. So he's free to do so.
What do you make of the comment he made that the president's decision to seek a third term is in violation of the Constitution?
He's lying because he was expecting to be the president. But it is not the manner that our party choose the one who will be the candidate. There was a Congress, and the Congress didn't choose him. So maybe he was frustrated because of that.
Pascal Yabenda is the chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. You are speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Democratic Republic of Congo's President Joseph Kabila has sent files of senior government officials accused of corruption to the country's attorney general for prosecution. Information Minister Lambert Mende tells reporter Peter Clotty the anti-corruption move indicates President Kabila's commitment to root out corruption, thereby fulfilling the promise he made in parliament to Congolese.
What we can say is that some files have been sent to the prosecutor's office. But to tell you names of people, this is something we can't, because they didn't disclose the name. Because it is to the prosecutor to disclose the name after some cross-checking. And the press is now giving names, you know, trying to make some analysis. But this is not something that is official. But what is sure is that the president's office sent files of denunciation from citizens to the general attorney to make inquiries. It is to the general attorney office to disclose the names. Till now, we can't confirm the names that are circulating in the press.
How many people are involved here?
It is not clear. We can't say how many because it is just the special advisor to the president for anti-corruption who brought files. He didn't say how many. He just brought files. But the press is speculating. So it is difficult for me as the spokesperson for the government to give you even a figure. So we just wait for the prosecutor to make a statement about it.
So when do you expect the attorney general to make, you know, suggesting to this? And some people are asking, why now is the president making a move to prosecute people who may have committed act of corruption in DRC's government?
You know, he appointed a special advisor for anti-corruption actions, I think, 2 months ago. And this is the first action from this anti-corruption special advisor to the president, the former Justice Minister, to tell you why it's difficult. He's in the office for 2 months and is starting his business.
A lot of the media practitioners have been saying that the president seemed to be going after his political opponents or enemies with this latest round of move of corruption against people perceived to be his opponents or enemies, so to speak. What do you say to that?
Since no name has been disclosed by the president's office or by the attorney general's office, everything is just a speculation.
Lambert Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, June 26th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. 3 doctors and 28 nurses have been quarantined in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown, when a mother they were caring for tested positive for Ebola after giving birth. Sierra Leone's chief medical officer, Dr. Brahima Kabo, says the woman escaped from the densely populated slum of Magazine Wharf, part of which had been placed in quarantine due to new Ebola cases there. Kabo said when doctors could not stop the woman's bleeding, she was transferred to an emergency ward at a local hospital where it was confirmed she had Ebola.
A lady from a supposedly quarantine home delivered in one of our health facilities. She bled and came with what we normally call postpartum hemorrhage. And when she came to the hospital, her temperature was about 34.2 degrees centigrade. She was very weak and she was hospitalized. They continued to monitor her temperature for almost 3-4 days. Until the 5th day, when her temperature rise up to about 38.7 degrees,
then she actually tested her for Ebola, and then she became positive. But when she came to the hospital, she didn't disclose that she came from a quarantine home. So that is where the three doctors who have always been visiting her, plus the 28 nurses who we are probably may have exposed to this lady, that was why they were quarantined.
I talked briefly the other day with you, Dr. Cabo, about a report that said that Sierra Leone has had other Ebola cases, new ones. Is the lady part of those new cases, or this is a new one?
Well, it is not a new one, because it is an area in the east of Freetown that they call Magazine Wharf, where we have been seeing positive cases. That was the place where the lady came from. So I will not say that these are new cases, because she's epidemically linked to somebody who was Ebola positive. So it's not a new case. The only thing, she didn't disclose her address when she actually came to the hospital, but she's epidemically linked to somebody who had Ebola. So we cannot say that it is a new case.
Dr. Cabo, why is Sierra Leone having difficulty to at least get to zero Ebola cases?
James, you know, it is always difficult for us to go to zero without any hiccups. What has happened is that the one and two cases that we see from people who have actually escaped from quarantine homes. As I speak, we have about 12 people who are missing from quarantine homes. And these are the people who are with their families. Their families refuse to disclose they are with them. And once they become ill, that was the time that we start seeing new infection. So it's not that we are not doing all what it takes to actually end the disease, but people run away, they go to their families, and their families continue to hide them. So that's the reason why we are seeing this 1 to 2 cases. But when you look at where we actually came from for the past few months, I believe we have been better. Like this week alone, I think we have only had up to 3 cases for this particular week, and it's now, today is the 4th day. So at least we have made progress in terms of actually eliminating the disease in our country.
Dr. Ibrahima Cabo is the Chief Medical Officer of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta on Thursday met with Pagan Amum, the reinstated Secretary General of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM, in Nairobi to learn more about Amum's meetings with South Sudan officials this week in Juba. Rebecca Nyandeng is a senior member of the SPLM who attended the meeting with the Kenyan President. She says President Kenyatta's effort to bring peace to South Sudan is not intended to sideline the IGAD-led peace process.
IGAD is not an agreement. It is a process. People are still on that process. But the Arusha was signed by the three parties to reunite the SPLM and then so that they can be able to achieve peace in Addis. So peace has not been signed in Addis in order for us to say that it has been sidelined. There has not been sidelined. Addis issues are concerning the war, the two warring parties. Security arrangement, power sharing, and all these are the issues being discussed. And Arusha, by the way, if it is agreed by the three parties, it will ease things in Addis.
There was a meeting of the National Liberation Council, and today we understand the Political Bureau is meeting. You are a member of the Political Bureau. Dr. Riek Machar is a member of the Political Bureau and the NLC. Both of you were not present at those meetings in Juba. How would that ensure the reunification of SPLM?
If the quorum of the Political Bureau is there, it is not necessary that Madam Rebecca and Dr. Riek has to be there. I don't have any problem because also Comrade Pagan, Denga, Lord John, Luke, Osi, Manibe were there.
Do you speak with Dr. Riek Machar?
I speak with everybody. I'm a mother of everybody.
And what does he tell you about these issues? Because the last time I spoke to him, he says he has no problem with reunification of SPLM, but if the meetings are done in Juba, he cannot go to Juba because he has taken up arms.
He's a party to Arusha agreement. Dr. Riek can wait, but the group of Dr. Riek can go to Juba so that we can now implement the Arusha and then also the constitution. The National Constitutional Conference will be called upon after the finishing of the SPLM document.
Madam Rebecca, they are friends of South Sudan who are saying that the SPLM is a sinking boat, that even if you reunify the party, the differences among the leaders of the party cannot bring them together on a table, and that the future for SPLM is very bleak. Do you agree with them?
That one is wishful thinking. I will not accept that, because SPLM, as I'm talking with you, this is a vehicle for the people of South Sudan now, because our people in the countryside, the rural areas, knows the SPLM. We need to see into it that we have to come back together and bring back the SPLM vision so that we drive our people together. We don't want to leave anybody behind.
But again, the people in the rural areas are crying that they have not seen services. They have not enjoyed what SPLM brought or fought for them.
It is true. There was our differences because we did not deliver. And this is what we are going to tell our people, that we are very sorry for what we have done, and then give us another chance so that we can be able to do what we did not do.
Rebecca Nyadeng is a senior member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. She was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. The state of Zimbabwe's democracy and economic development were the subject of a panel discussion in Washington hosted by the Washington-based think tank National Endowment for Democracy, or the NED. As Chris Gandhi of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports, the panelists expressed cautious optimism about Zimbabwe's future.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton, one of three panelists at the NED event titled The Challenges of Democratization and Economic Recovery in Zimbabwe, dismissed an Arab Spring-like revolt in Zimbabwe despite the country's political and economic hardships, citing the population's high level of education and strong religious belief. Wharton further said he was optimistic because Zimbabwe was in a very slow generational transition from a generation of men and women who fought against the minority government in the 1960s and 70s to a modern, pragmatic and less didactic group of people who are coming behind them.
I do not think that Zimbabwe is likely to see the sort of mass violence that has plagued other parts of Africa, partly because of education, partly because of social values of the people of Zimbabwe, partly because of the fabric of religious belief in Zimbabwe. I think these are all forces that will tend to hold society together rather than drive it apart.
Wharton attributed part of Zimbabwe's problem to the caliber of the country's politicians, whom he says are more interested in it as a way of living, to pay their bills and get nice cars, than protecting the people. Academic and SAPES Trust Chair Ipo Mandaza, also a panelist, too expressed optimism for Zimbabwe, but described the last 10 years as tumultuous but filled with incorrigible optimism.
Zimbabweans are known for their resilience and incorrigible optimism. And this is what brings us here, that while we describe as we should and acknowledge as we should that the country is in a political and economic crisis, we also want to believe that there are prospects for democratization, which is taking place, that there are prospects for economic recovery, which may not be too evident.
But he questioned Zimbabwe's ability to reform under the current leadership. Mandaza said he and his partners in the National Convergence hope to raise $10 billion that will go toward debt relief, education and other programs that could help jumpstart the country's economy.
That was Chris Gandhi of U.S. Zimbabwe Service reporting. The U.S. Supreme Court handed President Barack Obama a major victory on Thursday by upholding a key part of his signature health care law, which first went into effect 5 years ago. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
Outside the Supreme Court, supporters of President Obama's health care law celebrate in the wake of a major legal victory, upholding a key part of the law that helps more than 6 million Americans afford health insurance. Healthcare advocate Ron Pollack.
Make no mistake about this. Today's decision has monumental significance. It means that the Affordable Care Act is not just the law of the land, it will remain the law of the land.
At issue were federal tax subsidies that helped millions of Americans buy health insurance in several states. They included Gwen Jackson in Texas, who is caring for her sick husband.
It's just not about me. It's about 6.4 million other people who didn't have insurance. So, you know, that's a lot of people. Apparently, there was a need.
The Supreme Court upheld the subsidies by a vote of 6-3, with conservative Chief Justice John Roberts joining with the majority. It was the second high court success for President Obama on health care and Mr. Obama proclaimed victory at the White House.
And today, after more than 50 votes in Congress to repeal or weaken this law, after a presidential election based in part on preserving or repealing this law, after multiple challenges to this law before the Supreme Court, the Affordable Care Act is here to stay.
The high court ruling energized Democrats, including House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi.
We're so jubilant about this. It's a victory for common sense and for all American families. It's past time the Republicans abandoned their assault on the newfound health security the Affordable Care Act is providing.
Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid said it was time for Republicans to drop their efforts to repeal the law.
Let's move on to other topics. Stop this. Stop wasting the time of the American people by trying to repeal the law.
But Republican House Speaker John Boehner vowed to fight on.
It's raising costs for American families. It's raising costs for small businesses. And it's just fundamentally broken. And we're going to continue our efforts to do everything we can to put the American people back in charge of their own health care and not the federal government.
The court decision may not change public opinion, but on this day in front of the Supreme Court, it was Obamacare supporters who were doing the celebrating. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. South African Karina Horn and Kenyan Nancy Chepkemoi ran their lifetime bests to win their events at the Paavo Nurmi Games in Turku, Finland on Thursday. Horn clocked 11.16 seconds to edge Ivory Coast's Marie-Jose Talou into second spot in women's 100 meters. Chepkemoi completed women's 1500 meters in 4 minutes and 6.90 seconds. Egyptian Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed was second in men's javelin with a throw of 85.50 meters. Meanwhile, Nigerian Patience Okon and Zambian Kabanga Mupopo clinched a 1-2 African win in women's 400 meters as Morocco's Salima Alami prevailed in women's 3,000 meter steeplechase. South Africa's Kotso Mokwena and Zach Visser claimed a 1-2 triumph in men's long jump. Other African winners were Botswana's Paco Seribe, along with Kenyan's Isaiah Koech and Elijah Manangoi in men's 400 meters, 5,000 meters, and 1500 meters respectively. Turning to football, Sudan's El Merrekh host Algeria's Mouloudia El Oulma in Omdurman as the mini-league phase in this year's Orange Africa Champions League starts today, Friday. In an all-Algerian affair, defending champions and 10th Setif host USM Algiers in Setif tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe are at home to Sudan's El Hilal in Lubumbashi as Egypt's Smouha welcome Morocco's Maghreb Tetouan in Alexandria. Meanwhile, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel host Mali's Stade Malien in Sousse in the mini-league action in the Orange African Confederations Cup today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, the Republic of Congo's AC Leopards host South Africa's Orlando Pirates in Dolisie. Egypt's Zamalek engage Tunisia's CS Faxien in Cairo as Egyptian defending champions El Ahly encounter Tunisia's Esperance in Suez on Sunday. In rugby, Kenya hosts Tunisia in a Confederation of African Rugby Division 1A encounter in Nairobi tomorrow, Saturday. Finally, in volleyball, African champions Kenya, along with Algeria, compete at the Women's World Grand Prix in the Mexican capital, Mexico City, from tomorrow, Saturday. The finalists at the recent Africa Women's Nations Volleyball Championship face Australia, Colombia, Cuba, Kazakhstan, Peru, and Mexico. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, June 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, in the past 20 years, 18 African nations have been ravaged by war. Tens of millions of people have been victims of violence. Next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, Straight Talk Africa's Shaka Sali and his guests will take a closer look at the effects of PTSD for survivors of conflict and war. That's next time on VOA Africa.